It's imperative that we get to the bottom of just where the pandemic originated.
The White House speaks out about the possible origin of COVID-19. It's Friday, the 28th of May, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Ira Melman. Also ahead, the U.S. media focuses on anti-Asian hate. There could soon be help for those suffering from Havana syndrome. It is all on today's VOA Asia. White House coronavirus advisor Andy Slavitt says we need to get to the bottom of the origins of the pandemic pathogen, and the World Health Organization and China need to do more to provide definitive answers for the global community. The precise origin of the virus remains undetermined, and speculation has reigned about whether it jumped from animals to humans or whether it could have escaped from a Chinese government lab in Wuhan, the city that saw the first outbreak. At a Tuesday coronavirus task force briefing, Slavitt said that we need a completely transparent process from China. Slavitt said full assistance from the WHO is needed and that we don't have that now. To do that, President Joe Biden ordered another investigation. Reuters' Jeff Mason has more.
U.S. President Joe Biden on Wednesday said he has asked the intelligence community to further investigate the origins of the coronavirus. In a statement, the president called on the intelligence community to, quote, redouble their efforts to collect and analyze information that could bring us closer to a definitive conclusion and to report back to me in 90 days. Biden said the U.S. intelligence community was divided on the origin of the virus, including whether it came from human contact with an infected animal or a laboratory accident. White House Deputy Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre.
It's imperative that we get to the bottom of just where the pandemic originated, not just for the purposes of understanding this pandemic, but the pandemics to come.
I understand why we want it to get done, but why do we think that China would cooperate?
You know, this is something that you have to ask the Chinese government, right? This is something that should be important. It should matter to them, but this is a question for them.
U.S. agencies have been aggressively investigating COVID-19's origins since the U.S. government first recognized the virus as a serious health risk in early 2020. Government sources have told Reuters that U.S. intelligence agencies are examining reports that three researchers at China's Wuhan Institute of Virology were seriously ill a month before the first cases of COVID-19 were reported. The virus first appeared in Wuhan and then spread worldwide. However, the origin of the virus remains hotly contested among experts.
Because we don't know 100% what the origin is, it's imperative that we look and we do an investigation.
On Tuesday, U.S. infectious disease expert Dr. Anthony Fauci said he and many experts felt it was more likely that COVID-19 was a, quote, natural occurrence, but couldn't know the origin for sure and called for further investigation.
Reuters' Jeff Mason. After President Biden ordered a review of intelligence about where the virus emerged, Beijing had its say. China's foreign ministry spokesman Charlie Zhang said the U.S. has no interest in conducting a scientific study of the origins of COVID-19 and attempts to politicize the investigation. Their aim is to use the pandemic to pursue stigmatization, political manipulation, and blame shifting. You can find out more on our lead story by checking into voanews.com and our other digital platforms. U.S. President Joe Biden signed into law hate crime legislation in response to the recent rash of violence against Asian Americans. But residents in Southern California's Little Saigon say racism against Asians is nothing new. VOA's Elizabeth Lee examines the media's recent focus on anti-Asian hate.
In Southern California's Little Saigon, Vivian Lee is afraid after watching the news about racist attacks in the U.S.
I'm worried about my mom.
Police data collected from 16 U.S. cities found a 164% increase in attacks on people of Asian descent in the first quarter of this year compared to the same period in 2020.
I don't think there's anything new with the racism that's been targeted at Asian Pacific Islander. I think the only thing that is unique about the situation is that the mainstream media, mainstream community is now talking about it.
Whether it's on social media or on the streets, Asian Americans are now talking about racism and being crime targets after years of relative silence.
When I was a teenager, my family and I, living in San Jose at the time, were victims to an attempted home invasion robbery. And my parents didn't want to report it to the police because they were afraid of retaliation, because they were concerned with the language barrier.
Tin Ho came to the U.S. with his parents as Vietnamese refugees. Now a prosecutor, he points to another reason for underreporting attacks: distrust of the government. But now Asian Americans are reporting incidents of racism at higher rates. Since March of 2020, more than 6,600 racist incidents against Asians have been reported to the Stop AAPI Hate website in 12 languages.
We don't know necessarily if there's been a surge. We just know it's clearly widespread.
Many Asian Americans blame former President Donald Trump's rhetoric on COVID-19
to the Chinese virus
for the current spate of racist acts.
The fear, the economic distress, the frustration over being quarantined for an entire year, all the anger and fear is now being directed towards Asians. People have to find a scapegoat. And last year, the administration scapegoated Chinese people.
But Asian Americans of all backgrounds, often seen as a monolithic group, have been targets of pandemic-related abuse.
But people are using racial lenses to perceive us and then to interact with us.
Some Asian immigrants are also examining perceptions within their own communities about other ethnicities.
No matter what, there's always going to be this underlying tension of we don't understand them, we don't like them as much because we don't understand them, or they're somehow slightly different.
I think at the end of the day, we share a lot more in common than we have differences.
Many Asian Americans are now finding commonality with the Black Lives Matter movement. Vivian Lee has organized a rally for racial justice, something that would be impossible in Vietnam.
It's very hard because the police will come and will ask people to leave. To be in U.S., I think we have freedom to do whatever we want. The peaceful rally will be protected by the police.
Despite the fear of racially motivated attacks, Lee says she's grateful for a better, freer life in the U.S. Elizabeth Lee, VOA News, Westminster, California.
Thank you so much for spending your time with us here on VOA Asia. A group of U.S. senators has introduced legislation that would provide financial help to U.S. government workers suffering from brain damage connected to the mysterious Havana syndrome. Daria Digatz reports on this mysterious affliction.
In December 2017, Mark Polymeropoulos was adjusting to his new role as a senior CIA official in charge of secret operations in Europe. A business trip to Moscow was mandatory.
It was a trip I certainly regret taking, because in the middle of the night in early December 2017, I woke up. I had an incredible case of vertigo, tinnitus ringing in my ears, and I felt very sick. Look, I'd been in war zones in Iraq and Afghanistan, but I'd never experienced anything.
At first, Polymeropoulos thought it was food poisoning, but when he didn't improve after a few days, he went back to the doctors.
First of all, I was examined by the U.S. government doctors, and they did test, take a look and see if I looked somewhat similar to those who had been affected in Havana.
The mysterious Havana syndrome first showed up in 2016 when a U.S. embassy employee in Havana went to a doctor with similar symptoms, including intense headaches and dizzy spells. Over time, 24 people reported similar symptoms. The intelligence community began considering the possibility that the Russians were behind the mystery illness. The reason? According to the ex-CIA agent James Olson, Russian agents had done it before.
When I served in Moscow back in the 70s and 80s, we had a very similar attack directed against us, where our embassy, our personnel were being bombarded by microwave radiation.
There is currently no publicly available evidence linking the Russians to the symptoms, but last year the National Academy of Sciences report concluded the symptoms were likely caused by directed pulsed radio frequency energy. But the authors of the report said they couldn't say anything conclusively because they weren't given access to a lot of classified information. Dari Digutz for VOA News, Washington.
Australia is urging China to apply basic international standards of justice to the case of a Chinese-born Australian writer on trial in Beijing for espionage. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports.
After more than 2 years in detention, Australian Yang Hengjun will be tried for espionage in a closed court in China. Yang has been held in custody since January 2019, after flying into the southern Chinese city of Guangzhou for the Lunar New Year. He was placed under investigation for allegedly harming China's national security, but was later charged with spying, although officials have given no specific details about his alleged crimes. Yang is a former Chinese diplomat, but became an Australian citizen and was based in Sydney. During his incarceration in China, the Australian government said the writer had been held in harsh conditions. Yang has denied any wrongdoing. Australian Foreign Affairs Minister Maurice Payne says Australia is hoping for a fair hearing, but hasn't been given any explanation or evidence by Beijing for the charges.
I very much hope that we have a transparent and open process. We're not interfering in China's legal system. The concerns that we have raised are legitimate ones, but we do expect those basic international standards of justice to be met.
Chinese officials have in the past accused Australia of anti-China hysteria. Media reports have previously suggested that if convicted, he could face years in prison or the death penalty. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
This is VOA Asia. Some veteran Hollywood actors say a law intended to help gig economy workers has the unintended consequence of threatening nonprofit theaters. Michael Sullivan has the story from Los Angeles.
Actor Edward James Olmos was among the performers who showed up at a recent event supporting live local theaters, such as this one in the Los Angeles immigrant neighborhood of Boyle Heights. The theater's founder, Mexico-born Josefina Lopez, wrote the play and co-wrote the screenplay for the 2002 film Real Women Have Curves, about the struggles of immigrant women.
I've been in Hollywood for over 30 years, and it's been so hard to get Latino stories because they just want to do the narco stories. We're just the bad guys in a white man's story. And so I decided to open my own theater so that I could produce my plays.
But small theaters' tiny budgets are being strained. These actors say many of those who work in the nonprofit venues are volunteers, but are included under a new state law that gives gig economy workers, such as Uber and Lyft drivers, a guaranteed minimum income. Playwright Josefina Lopez.
But there's no way we can do that. And if we have to treat every actor like an employee, maybe we can do one show a year and that's it.
A bill making its way through the California legislature would offer a lifeline, say its proponents, by creating a state-administered payroll system and offering grants to small nonprofit performance groups. But critics object to an expanded arts bureaucracy. Some labor groups worry, too, that workers in nonprofit theaters face exploitation. But the bill has many supporters, including Hollywood veteran Edward James Olmos.
I mean, it's like anything else. You have to have a training ground, and the kids deserve it.
Success in show business usually comes after many years. Another Hollywood star, Danny Glover, recalls performing in a small theater with 10 people on stage and just 5 in the audience. But he says each performance is important.
We're going to need all the art we can, all the insight we can, all the story we can.
Glover co-founded a small Los Angeles theater to highlight the black experience and says theaters like that need help. A Hollywood colleague agrees, saying small theaters teach people to appreciate each other. Actor Joe Spano.
It's really important that we learn empathy, that we learn how to be with other people, that we learn to understand who they are and have them understand who we are so that we can keep this extraordinary thing called democracy intact.
Mike O'Sullivan, VOA News, Los Angeles.
You've been listening to VOA Asia. Like us on Facebook, VOA Asia. Follow us on Twitter at VOA Asia. And you can find us on Instagram and YouTube and at voanews.com. Thank you for joining us. Thanks to our service chief, Diane Gao. Our VOA Asia team includes Doug Bernard, Keith Lane, Amy Heibels, and Jim Stevenson. I'm Ira Melman. Enjoy the day ahead and stay safe.